shouldn't be so eager to be offended. The narcissism of small differences leads to the most boring conformity.
Think about that.
This is not acceptable.
My opinion does matter, unfortunately, for you.
Sue me for having a life.
You jabroni!
This is the Brian Suits Show.
Pretty good.
You're listening to a Best of the Brian Suits Show on AM 770 KTTH.
The Mariners don't have a song. They need a song. And I would call it Tiny Houses. There's plenty of music celebrities that can maybe do it.
I feel like they do have a song.
Do they? Don't say Louie Louie. That's yeah. I mean, they don't have a song about the Mariners.
Well, let's go right back to 1993.
Whatever. That's a theme. We did it. We did it here at Cairo.
Their mighty bats will come for you.
I mean something like this. I mean Danny Kaye. See if you can
so
figure out.
I say D. I say D O. D O D. D O D G. D O D G E R S. Team, 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 team. O. I say O M. O M A. O M A L.
Oh. He spells O'Malley.
Jeez.
I know. That's kind of a...
M-A-R.
That's kind of like I-N-E. If you took a fourth grader and said, do a song and work in Dodgers and O'Malley, you know, the ownership and the whole thing. But anyway, that's one of the great baseball songs. But wow, is that old school. That is so old school.
Too much spelling.
And also, in gratuitous mention of the radio partner... No one but no one can beat the San Francisco Giants.
When the Giants come to town, it's bye-bye, baby. Every time the chips are down.
Every time the chips are down, Greg.
It's bye-bye, baby. History's in the making at Fantastic Park.
A dump. They're on a station called KSFO, which now is, I want to say they're sports betting now. It's not just sports, it's sports betting. But back then, you had to work them into the song.
Oh, bye, bye, baby. Listen to the broadcasts on KSFO.
Yeah, I can hear that on KIRO.
That's my corn out there. You guys are guests in my corn.
Get out of my future ethanol, says... What's his name? Well, so are you settled on that? For me, it's Moneyball today. Are you settled on Field of Dreams?
Oh, the distance.
You also, though, you can't beat that soundtrack on Moneyball.
Eases me.
Well, in January of 2021, Seattle City Council member Andrew Lewis announced an ambitious goal to double the city's tiny house stock, calling the plan, "It Takes a Village." So you know how he grew up. You know what side of the fence he was on. He wanted to raise more than $15 million in public and private dollars to add 480 new tiny homes and create 12 new villages of tiny homes. So do the math. Once off the ground, he estimated 720 people could be temporarily sheltered within 18 months of the program. Now, speaking of the one in Ballard, one thing that businesses and neighbors notice is that anywhere there's a tiny home village, right outside the village, there is refuse of the drug paraphernalia variety or the empty alcohol bottle variety. Because they have that rule that we don't combine rehab with housing. You have to rehab on your own time. If we're giving you a free house, there's no drugs or alcohol in there. And the unintended consequence of that is piles of bottles outside the tiny home villages because they're filled with people who are either alcoholics or druggies. So there's that. And also, by the way, I've heard people describe that some of the vagrants are fighting over empties because they recycle. That's the thing about a tiny home village. It's really, really helped the recycling industry. And so this is not a good thing. You know, if, you know, and here's the thing. You know what would be a better use of money? If you paid the addicts to check in, if you paid them to attend rehab, if you gave, there has to be a carrot or a stick. I mean, ask every mule known to man. There has to be a carrot or a stick. That's that. Now, if you want to get rid of the stick, if you want to decriminalize the stick and turn it into a water noodle, into a plain noodle, then that's what we've done. But there has to be a carrot or there has to be a stick. And so there's that. Bye-bye, baby. On that one. Anyway, where are these houses? Where'd the money go? Where are the houses? He gave himself a hard deadline to get everything done to the end of 2021. Oh, those were dreamy days, January of 2021. The newly elected city council member, the optimism, let me tell you firsthand. Zero new city-initiated tiny houses were built from the money he said he raised. Well, the project didn't directly build any tiny house villages. It was wildly successful at raising money for his low-income housing institute, Seattle's largest nonprofit provider of tiny housing. Boy, how much work is done there. And again, you know, if you're saying, well, he's a very insensitive guy. Why does he always say homeless industrial complex? Folks, if you knew the bureaucracy behind the enablement of living like this, you'd be shocked. And they never publicize that. Local media doesn't do. There's no way to estimate. You can't wrap your arms around the nine full-time positions for every homeless person. And there's a direct conflict of interest in relying on them to count the homeless and all thing. Camp Unacceptable is to the north of me under I-5. Well, I forget what the other one is. The one down by Mercer, that dead woman had been rolled in a tarp and had been there for 4 days. You know, I'm going to go ahead and say move that one up the priority list. You know, if they're rolling up the dead in the blue tarps, that's not what those were meant for. If someone, and this is a very Jonathan Show-like thing, but if you were able to add up, and there's no central database to track all of the various organizations that do this stuff, but they're not volunteers, I'll tell you that.
You're listening to a Best of the Brian Suit Show.
One of my men in Iraq self-published a novel called Violence of Action by Philip Holt. And it posits a bunch of special forces veterans taking down drug gangs in the state of Juan de Fuca. Rangers and special forces guys, after their service, robbing druggies that are bringing drugs across Vancouver Island. Violence of Action, Philip Holt, H-O-L-T. Buy it wherever fine books about that type of action is found. Well, a recent killing spree in Tijuana could have been lifted from a TV script. Enraged drug lords hunting down corrupt police officers who stole a drug shipment. Two of the officers suspected of the theft have been killed, say prosecutors. I'm sure they're crying about it. But so have at least three other officers, according to the city's former police chief, suggesting the cartel believed to have owned the drugs may have launched a generalized retribution. And the reason they do that is because somebody knows something. That's how they work. And cartels don't have any rules of engagement or oversight or anything like that. It is the latest blow for Tijuana, which has had the most homicides of any city in Mexico, with about double the number of the pace that comes second, which is Ciudad Juarez across from El Paso. So we're at 94. We're lower than that, like 89, which is close to the 1994 high in the city of Seattle. Tijuana has seen around 2,000 murders annually since 2001. By comparison, Houston, Texas, which has about the same population, saw 435 killings in 2022. Houston is bigger than Seattle by two or three times. It's an incorporated area. And can you imagine 435 murders in one city?
That's a wild number.
I mean, even L.A. doesn't have that. But Tijuana, 2,000. And not only they're all drug related or drug adjacent, because what they'll do is, and this is the crazy thing. It's so common in Ciudad Juarez or Tijuana, when drug cartels kill people, they mutilate the bodies and leave them on display. And Mexican police and FBI advisors have pointed out that Mexico has loads of serial killers because why? They don't get caught. They just have to mimic another drug homicide. And so, I mean, talk about self-selecting. So anyway, back to the cartels in Tijuana. According to prosecutors, in mid-November, a half dozen local and state police officers in Tijuana allegedly hatched a plot to steal a large shipment of drugs from a warehouse where traffickers were storing it. Video emerged last week of the officer's pickup truck pulling out of the building with big plastic wrap bales of booger sugar or cocaine or yayo filling the truck bed. State prosecutor Maria Elena Andrade confirmed this week that three state detectives were under investigation in the case, along with a similar number of Tijuana municipal police. And, you know, in some ways, it's alluring because it sounds like the perfect crime. You kick the door with the authority, at least the impression that you're there lawfully. And so they don't shoot back because you don't want to be a cop killer, even in Mexico. And so that has launched a lot of copycat druggy on druggy crime where they'll kid out like the popo. And in some cases, even, you know, purchase companies that make uniforms and tactical kit that the Mexico has a national police force that we support financially. They get Toyota quad cab pickups with a big roll bar. They get first class kit, meaning, you know, the little vesties that they wear and all that. Because in America, that's a, you know, retail business. There are some uniform places in America that require that you show a legal ID to have a jacket that says police. But there's no law that says you can't wear a blue windbreaker with a yellow FBI on the back. Now, if you're doing it to deceive people, then yeah, there's a law against that. Okay, so there's that. But anyway, in this case, these guys, I'm assuming they were off duty because I'm sure they're not that unethical, wore their tactical kit to do a raid on a warehouse that they knew was storing the cocaine. At that point, by the way, my trust in my fellow crooked cop goes right through the floor. I mean, if I would assume that if they did that, then one of them is going to go to the cartel and say, I know where your coke is. Or go to the cartel, and probably the last message they ever send is, if you give me $1 million, I'll show you where your coke is, or whatever. But anyway, just hours after the theft, gunmen sprayed the federal prosecutor's office in Tijuana with at least 30 rounds, pockmarking the building's facade. Oh, that's a message. Within an hour, one of the municipal police officers allegedly involved in the heist was gunned down on a street in Tijuana. But so anyway, that is unfolding, and it's ongoing. It's not like they're going to go bust the drug gang and stuff. But I think with my rules of thumb, don't steal from drug cartels and stuff. And the Mexicans always do those crazy elaborate perp walks because the Mexican military, the Mexican Marines are enforcing domestic law. And they come with Black Hawk helicopters, you're welcome, you know, American kit, you're welcome, the whole thing. And then they will parade those guys, they'll put them in their underwear. And apparently they haven't heard from BBC about that. And then stand behind a table that's festooned with, you know, world-class, very actual military-grade weapons, drugs and cash. And all that. And then, but the soldiers or Marines are always covering their face. It's not for their safety, it's for their family's safety. So anyway, yeah, be careful about stealing from people that don't have lines.
You're listening to a Best of the Brian Suit Show.
Washington State can't account for thousands of school kids since the pandemic, but it could be worse. We could be North Carolina, Colorado, Louisiana, New York, or California. So this is a story out of the New York Times. Kailani Taylor Cribb hasn't taken a single class in what used to be her high school since the height of the coronavirus pandemic. She vanished from Cambridge, Massachusetts public school rolls in 2021 and has been, from an administrative standpoint, unaccounted for since then. She's alive. She's a human being. In fact, she's the cover photo of this article. She just chose not to go back to school, and she has parents that are not pushing her there, or they either disenrolled her. And the most common thing is disenrollment for homeschooling. It's not like there's, you know, these kids are donating, you know, kidneys in some secret Swiss lab or something. They're known. It's known where they are. However, in other cases, they left school. They sat at home on Zoom, going through the ridiculous remote PE kabuki dance and more. And they just chose not to go back. And so the raw numbers for the state of Washington, 10,614. And that's a lot. You know, this is not a huge state. California tried this on. Well, New York, 59,000 students did not return to school. California, 151,579. I'm here to tell you, it's for probably one of two reasons. Because you left, ding, 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 because it was failing your kid. And you never went back, but you did check out. That's what I don't get. Or they're being homeschooled. Either way, you have to inform the district that, see that kid over there with the super high test scores and the super high state standards and all that? Yeah. Taking them out. Thank you. Anyway, these students didn't move out of state, and they didn't sign up for private school or homeschool, according to publicly available data. In short, they're missing. So that's why that's odd. They do know, like in the state of Washington, all that, you know, you have to go say, all right, I'm going to homeschool this kid, so they can account for the kid. So this is, in many cases, if you leave a state, you got to get your records and vaccination records and all that to take to the new school. So anyway, it's not the student's fault. If I, in eighth grade, if I could skip everything but history, I would have stayed, at home. But that's the raw number for the state of Washington. The other states that were included in the analysis but did not have missing kids were your Delaware, your North and South Dakota, your South Carolina, not your North Carolina, your Nebraska, your Rhode Island, and your Montana, and your Pennsylvania, and your Florida, and your Tennessee. Let me do a quick run through here. Let's see: red, 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 blue, red, red. Okay. And let's do a quick round robin about the top states with missing kids: blue, 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 Louisiana. Oh no, it's Louisiana's red, right? Colorado, North Carolina, Washington, Georgia, red state, kind of ish, Minnesota, Wisconsin. Anyway, I don't know. Some say there might be a pattern. That's not me.
This is just yet another example of some of the collateral damage coming out of the pandemic, it's resulting from governmental policies? You can't just hit a giant reset button on society and expect everything will go right back to normal the way it was before. You changed everything for 2.5 years. You changed the way people learned. You changed the way people worked. And you're going to see terrible data like this come out for years to come.
And these missing kids, this adds up to well over 220,000 across the country. I mean, what do you think they're going to do? Are they going to be the grill man or the fryer man? I mean, they dropped out. In the case of this, the girl who's the lead in this article, she dropped out as a sophomore.
Yeah, we're not talking like a second grader here. We're talking about someone who doesn't have their GED yet, like, and they're almost about to get it. And then, I'm just not going to return whatsoever. And then also match this with the story out of Maryland, Brian.
Wait. Quick. Yeah. Quick palate cleanser. Why do dogs chase cars or trucks?
to get to the other side?
No.
Is this a riddle?
No. What? Okay. Because it's moving. It's literally a chase reflex.
Uh-huh.
That's why a dog chases a car. And I have on video my dog Lucille hitting 35 miles an hour. Because we choose to run right next to my car on the driveway, on the 1/8-mile driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was moving. That's why dogs chase cars. So I was this morning years old when I learned the real reason.
It reminds me of the dog chasing the milk truck, and when he catches it, he can't drive it.
See, that's why I'm not an internationally famous fundraising activist, Reverend. Because I draw the wrong conclusion from I don't see the spirituality of why dogs chase specifically milk trucks.
It reminds me of the dog chasing the milk truck, and when he catches it, he can't drive it.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, meanwhile in Baltimore, what's the number? 23 in an entire school district.
Yeah, 23 schools in Baltimore had zero. That's none.
The null set.
Zero students who tested proficient in math, and another 20 schools had just one or two students testing proficient in math. I mean, we are failing our kids left and right. This is reaching a crisis level now in a number of ways, and this is just yet another example.
That's why for 2.5 years I've been saying there is no full recovery. The ripples of this are going to especially hit you oldsters when your live-in nurse blows air in your IV or something 10 years from now because they didn't pay it. They weren't in school, and you can't catch up for this. Well, there's already state universities in America where you have to start with remedial 11th grade English before you can take a freshman course. That's pre-pandemic, okay? So we'll get what we voted for. The bluer you are, the more you're going to want a live-in nurse from Montana. I have a weird feeling. So, but you have the guy.
I have the guy with the thing in the deal. I have a Fox affiliate in Annapolis who's trying to catch up with lawmakers to get them to respond to these awful numbers about students failing in Baltimore, and this is what the exchange sounded like.
I sent you an email about the 23 schools in Baltimore City who have zero students who are proficient in math.
You do a school story about something succeeding in the schools, I'll respond. You never do.
Oh my God.
Who do you hold accountable for
your
the failing?
Your boss. Your bosses for the distorted coverage you provided.
Well, the data came from Baltimore City Public Schools. You can see there, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg not answering the questions.
What a jackass. I'm sure that's exactly what parents want to hear is blame the person holding the mic, yeah, asking the tough question.
What about all the great things going on?
Yeah, that's when I hear the good news, like how about Terrapins Lady Basketball or something. It's the founder of an independent school was on with Fox, a reverend, and he was identifying that the district has also got this super high one parent household thing going on, and where there is low school achievement, there's high crime. Oddly enough, like House Street, right next to us here at El Casa del Radio, where I learned that
it reminds me of the dog chasing the milk truck, and when he catches it, he can't drive it.
A timeless metaphor is what that is.
You're listening to a best of the Brian Suit Show.
All right, so let's listen to this about the arraignment of the home invaders. Three of four guys are in custody, but wait till you hear what they were doing once they got in your home.
The victims in some of these cases were held at gunpoint in their own homes for nearly an hour while the suspects demanded their account information. One of the suspects even being so bold as to leave the home while this was all happening, go out and test to make sure a bank card was working, then return before finally letting the victims go.
So kind of a big set on these guys. And so to help talk about the new MO, the new breed of home invasion and personal security, kind of like Billy Jack, but in real life, Special Forces veteran Michael Rourke, the owner of Advanced Operational Concepts, will tweet out contact information. How you doing this morning? I hope you don't mind the Billy Jack comparison.
That was a great movie. Hey, good morning, Brian. It's good to be with you again.
So these guys are now in custody. One of them, actually, his girlfriend was pleading for him to come out because he's basically a good guy, to get out on bail. So there's that. So short of that, though, there's the thing where they follow people home in North Seattle, Mountain Lake Terrace, all the way down to Wallingford, apparently, in one case. And wait for you to open your door in a couple cases. But the scariest cases were the 3 a.m., home invasions, because they were disabling Wi-Fi, and then feeling like they had all, now that there was no way for people, and then grabbing their phones, feeling like there was no way to contact police, they took their time. So you heard that. In one case, a guy said, what's a pin on this card? Went down to a bank, checked it. They'd given him a good pin. And then in the meantime, when they broke in, they took the residents' phones and held guns to them and said, unlock the phone. So I don't know, where do we start with a home invasion? Do we start with noticing someone reconning your house? I mean, or do you start at the front door? Where do you start to home invasion proof your house?
Well, I think the first place to start is to be the enemy. Locate your home as a burglar or home invader would. You know, what are the weak points? How are they going to be able to get in? And then, you know, you're going to want to start beefing up the doors. You can put enhanced strike plates on. You know, some are even the full length of the inside of the door jamb, which will make it more resistant to break-ins. Those are pretty inexpensive.
I mean, like reinforcing the actual frame?
Yeah, it's just the strike plate goes on the side of the door that's facing the lock. You know, that's basically against the door jamb. And that basically, so if someone's trying to kick it, that spreads the impact down the length of the entire door rather than just at those little screws holding the deadbolt in place. You know, you want to put away any, like, garden tools, what I call dual-purpose items. That shovel outside for gardening could also be used to smash through a window, smash through the glass on your door. Your alarms, cameras, unless they're monitored, those are just after the camera is just an after the fact investigation tool. Much better to have a hardwired system because of the Wi-Fi jammers. People have gone to the do it yourself Wi-Fi based systems. These Wi-Fi jammers are just going to proliferate throughout the criminal community once they're seeing the success. Just like everyone learned how easy it is to get into Kias. Now everyone's
this is identical to that.
Jammer.
Identical knowledge base and spreading through TikTok and YouTube, and that number one, you buy a Wi-Fi jammer on Amazon and you paid $60 to make $8,000 or whatever. But yeah, that one thing. I mean, because many of those, you know, Ring doorbell clones, they advertise it. Hey, just stick them anywhere you want and all that. They're all Wi-Fi based, but they have a hardwire LAN capability, but they're not going to say, oh, it's with your grandson over or the techie nerd across the street. You know, it's not going to sell like that. But yeah, people need to know right now that the way that they get in is way different. And they're so sure that grabbing the Wi-Fi and jamming it disables your alarm that they sit around all night long conversing with you and check, go down to the bank with your ATM card and come back.
Exactly. And that's why it's also important to have a monitored alarm system. If that alarm goes off, someone at the other end is going to call you. And if you don't have the, whoever answers doesn't have the code word to say everything's okay, then they're going to go ahead and contact the police and get them moving your way.
And that's generally how it works, right? They call and you say Afghanistan, banana stand, and they know everything is okay if you say that. But if you say the red rooster's in the hen house, then they send the popo? Yep. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. You know, obviously, monitor systems are more expensive, but, you know, it's getting to that point.
And I guess I should caution, because somewhere out there, someone's saying, yeah, well, my Mossberg 500 says different. Well, okay, at 3 a.m. with no warning, you get woken up, and maybe there's a flashlight in your face and the whole thing. That's a different deal. I mean, if you want to, with family members in the house, you know, play trench broom, with that, go ahead. But I mean, I got to say, by the time if they get through the front door and an alarm doesn't detect it, the ball's in their court. They really are going to win.
Yeah, they have the advantage. You know, speed, surprise, violence, of action. You know, or the principles of an assault.
Yeah, and that's where like so with a strike plate, at least you're going to hear the first kick on the door. That's going to wake you up. What about does hearing a dog bark? I mean, a real dog bark, not a Home Alone MP3, but I mean a real dog bark or seeing a dog. Does that have a deterrent effect?
They do have deterrent effects. Even small yappy dogs can have a deterrent effect. Obviously, you know, if you have a dog that's also big enough to maybe take on an intruder, absolutely. You can also do things like there are doorstop alarms, basically like a wedge that you can just kind of stick under the door, and it'll have like 120 decibel alarm when that thing starts getting moved. You can reinforce the master bedroom door, you know, put a solid core door there and a reinforced frame. So there's more of a safe haven. By more time, family members can know to basically collapse to that position, and everyone locks inside, and you're getting on the phone to the police. Keep a landline. People are getting rid of landlines. Keep a landline in your home, because it's a lot harder to jam those.
Yeah, you have to like physically find it with wire cutters and literally cut it. And so that, it's weird that by the way, if you're subscribing to the 10th break at the KTTH app last night, that's what I talked about was, you know, some analog things are worth keeping. And that's definitely one of them. And then also don't use a wireless phone. Use a hardwired phone with that landline. No, it's funny because, you know, I'm noting this based on the police reports that we read yesterday from King County Court. And I got to say, by Monday, there's going to be some copycat home invasions. And also some of the home invaders are sharing their observations on who to follow. Like, for instance, follow an Asian woman from a casino or her bank to her house. So how do you not lead the bad guy directly to the pot of gold?
Yeah, the follow home crime is called jugging. I think these hoodlums get style points when they can invent a new name for what they do. And that's some basic and it's fairly easy counter surveillance principles. You know, basically keeping an eye when you're walking out of the place, like if you're coming out of a bank or a casino, don't have any money or bank envelopes visible. Put that stuff away. Take a look around as you're heading to your vehicle, what we call the five yard and 25 yard sweeps. As you're getting in, look for occupied vehicles and then look to see if anyone's pulling out behind you. And you know, these bad guys, they're not trained spies. They don't know how to do surveillance properly. They're going to engage in with pacing, which basically they're going to keep the same distance behind you. Even if it makes sense on like a 3 or 4 lane road, if you're the slowest car out there, if it makes sense for any other driver to go around you, they're going to stay behind you. Then they'll do things where, okay, if you run a yellow light, they'll probably run the red light in order to stay with you. So kind of keep an eye on your rearview mirror, but you know, don't do it to the extent where you become a hazard to people in front of you. And just kind of apply some of these basic principles. And that's some of the things we're going to talk about in an event we have coming up.
And,
but yeah.
And another thing, a lot of people don't know, like Seattle Police and King County Sheriff's Office, they have outlying offices, and you should all know where they physically are. And as a quick detour coming home from Safeway, popping into the King County satellite office at Suquamish Ridge and getting out like you have business in there is a quick way to detect surveillance and deter following on that. So a little.
These are what we call safe havens. But also, if you determine without a doubt that you're being followed, immediately get on the phone with 911 and let the dispatcher know what's happening. And then they'll start giving you instructions on what to do as the police are starting to come in.
Okay, so with, seeing how trends work, I see an increase in this and an increased need for people to have just a daily sidewalk or Safeway situational awareness. So what event do you have coming up?
Yeah, so up to now, our company's primarily been focused on, businesses, high net worth families, business executives. But, we've gotten fed up with seeing, these criminals walking away and victims being treated as second class citizens. So for the first time, we're going to start offering situational awareness mindset training to the general public. And people can go to our website at opcon.com and click on the live training link.
This will not involve the car battery shocks and cold water immersion that you were subject to, right?
That's the advanced class. Will be the just kidding. Nothing like that. But this is going to be practical advice and examples that people can use that day as they're heading home.
Okay, and so OpCon, OPCON, like operational control, opcon.com. Yeah. Yeah. And
at OpCon, Advanced Operational Concepts, just abbreviated, ADOPCON.com, and click the live training link. And people can also sign up for email updates.
All right. Yeah, mindset isn't trained enough. People need to, you can live on Mercer Island or whatever, but if you come to downtown Seattle, you should know what you don't know. You should know how to act and how to present yourself and the whole thing. So anyway, a great introduction. So that will be very valuable, I'm sure. So folks, if you want to do that, again, the website again, Mike?
It's adopcon.com, ADOPCON.com.
All right, for Advanced Operational Concepts, it's owner-founder Mike O'Rourke joining us, Special Forces veteran from a super-secret place to the south, maybe to the north. We don't know. But anyway, thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks, Brian. Good to talk with you.
All right, AM 770 KTTH.
You're listening to a Best of the Brian Suit Show. Listening to a Best of the Brian Suit Show. Don't those are your radio credentials you hang around your neck as
that's
you walk
right
into the building?
Kind of a big deal. I'm in radio. Here's my photo ID, as you see.
60% of the time, it works every time.
Works every time. And then, so, Brian, that makes no sense.
That smells like pure gasoline.
Gotta be honest with you. It's very strong. It's pungent. So we had an all-staff meeting, all hands, all staff. You know who wasn't there? Of course, you know who wasn't there.
Oh, sorry. I was only working like my eighth job of the day.
Well, one of your jobs is to be a teammate, be a member of this Team Bonneville Seattle. We did a head count. Everyone was there on Zoom.
Okay, well.
Even the engineer dude who's literally around the corner right next to your office, he was on Zoom. He was 10 feet away on Zoom in his office.
Well, what insights, revelations?
Well, we got to Tomlin. It was silence. It was crickets.
Any machinations I need to be made privy to?
Right after Suits is Tomlin, ST, and they said, Brian Suits? And I'm like, yeah, Yep, here.
And then the fail then Kathy goes,
Tomlin, Greg Tomlin, just crickets.
So. Bueller?
You missed all kinds of important stuff, and I'm not at liberty to discuss it on the radio. I can call you out.
Suits and Tomlin are just outperforming, and we want to give them more money? Because I mean, if they said that, I'm interested.
Well, maybe they did. No, they didn't. But anyway, it was I go way back with the big boss when she was director of promotions here. And so I got to air. We did the airing of grievances before the actual meeting.
Okay, nice.
And I said, I've got two grievances I need to air. I showed her the great issue of the decorative wood paneling that I was accused of tearing down off the wall.
Which, oh, yes.
It's just because they put the 3M mounting strips the wrong way. It's just right out of the box, like four times. Put them up and down, not horizontally, put them vertically.
How's the SPD investigation going into that case?
They've reached
new funding.
A fork in the road. I guess there's a Fox event at the Reagan Library. Can the, because T. Boone Pickens, he purchased Reagan's Air Force One and donated it to the library. And it's inside. And it's up on pilot. It's really, really, you can walk through it. You can walk through, you enter at the nose and you walk through. And it's so funny because it's a 707. And at the time in the 80s, it was the Majesty of America. And I think it was Johnson who first had the 707. Or whatever, and it was, you know, an impressive plane for its time, but it's so crazy because when you go through, the first thing you're struck by is, man, this is a small-ass plane, and it took him a long enough time to get to a 747 on that, but anyway, it's a must. If for some reason the Huskies are in a bowl game or whatever, or you have some reason to go down, you lose a bet, and you have to go to Southern California for winter or for Christmas or anything like that, or vacation. If you've never done it, I got to say the Reagan Library is absolute bucket list.
I have yet to make my way to the Reagan Library, but I've heard good things.
It really is. And, you know, in all honesty, if you are a history dork, guilty, it is worth getting a hotel out in that neck of the woods. And, you know, so that you don't have any sort of artificial time limit and you can stroll through it. It is a great, because like I've been to the Nixon Library. Is pretty bare bones, you know. It's not like he was known for his tremendous wit and humor or anything like that. There's no like the hidden Richard Nixon. I think, you know, in many ways he was a fairly, you know, lamentable and pitiful individual of great momentous, you know, presidential decisions. And the library really focuses on that. The Reagan Library really gets to kind of the 80s. It's kind of a flashback 80s thing. And there's a bunch of really fun things that you can do with your kids. There's like, there's a horse mannequin with the saddle and the legs are cut off. And you can put your kids in the saddle. In the background is a high-res photo of Reagan on his horse. So it looks like you are riding your horse with Reagan. It's pretty cool.
Isn't calling it a library kind of a misnomer?
There is an archive.
Museum.
Well, there's the walkthrough part that is the Reagan Museum, but there is an archive because I went through the process once to look at some stuff about the Achille Lauro hijacking from the 80s and all that. And it's a separate building on the same, you know, property, which is amazing. It looks west towards the Pacific Ocean. Then they also do some really cool rotating displays. So there's the permanent Reagan Library and Air Force One. Below here's what's not at the Nixon Library. Below Air Force One is a pub, is an Irish pub. And it's, you know, at the Nixon Library, there's like, okay, there's a cafe, there's a buffet or whatever, you know, it's a like a walkthrough IKEA lunch or whatever. At the Reagan Library, there's this huge, huge area under Air Force One, gigantic windows, 10 stories high. You go through and you grab your, you know, order a hot meal or whatever, but you can get a Guinness or get a Harp or get various Irish drinks that are better known to other people than me. Then you walk out there and just sit there and take it all in. And Marine One, the old Marine One, is there. There's an F-14 outside. Really, really cool. And then there's a section of the Berlin Wall. There's a scale reproduction of the Rose Garden, that whatever it is, that area of the White House where you walk out and the helicopter is idling. and you yell at the press and they yell stories back at you and all this. And there's a section of the Berlin Wall plopped right there. So if you're going to go to the mausoleum or go to the final resting place of Ron and Nancy, that's you walk right by. It's really cool.
This is my future self getting a beer at the Reagan Library.
That's a pretty good sound effect.
You can hear the foam. That's a foamy pour. That's a crappy pour.
It's a really foamy pour.
Yeah, you're fired. But anyway, a whole lot of fun. My friend Kennedy and her husband Dave went to the service and the walk-by that morning. I was in Baghdad, but in 2004, 2005, when Reagan died. But she went and she said it was really moving. But it's a really, really cool library.
Anyway, 0-2.